This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world development. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Well, in South Sudan, there has been a crisis, a critical humanitarian situation now since civil war broke out again 3 years ago. And there's a lot of internally displaced persons moving around in the country. From this, about 1.65 million. There are around 250,000 people with disabilities in the IDP camps. So they are very much affected by the civil war and also by the famine.
That's Malte Finders, South Sudan Program Coordinator for Light for the World. Full details coming up.
Also, the South African government is appealing for calm ahead of tomorrow's planned anti-immigrant march, and police continue to crack down on street vendors in Zimbabwe's capital.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Pope Francis says millions of people in South Sudan risk being condemned to death by famine and war. The Pope described the conflict in South Sudan as pitting family members against one another, a situation made worse by a severe food crisis. Speaking at his weekly audience in St. Peter's Square, he called for urgent humanitarian aid. The Pope said that now, more than ever, there should be a commitment by everyone to contribute food aid and allow it to reach suffering populations. South Sudan President Salva Kiir has promised safe access for aid agencies trying to reach those in need. Famine has been declared in two counties in Unity State, but much of the country faces food insecurity due to violence and drought.
Also, an international NGO is working to make sure that the nearly 2 million people with disabilities in South Sudan get relief aid. This, as parts of the country have declared famine. Light for the World says even the estimated 250,000 living in internally displaced people's camps lack basic services due to a lack of access to infrastructure. Many of the disabled, as well as children and older people, are not able to stand in the long lines for food and supplies. They may also have special nutritional needs. Malte Finders is Light for the World's program coordinator for South Sudan. He spoke with me about the situation of people with disabilities who are in desperate need of food and assistance.
Well, in South Sudan, there has been a crisis, a critical humanitarian situation now since civil war broke out again 3 years ago. And there's a lot of internally displaced persons moving around in the country. From this, about 1.65 million. There are around 250,000 people with disabilities in the IDP camps. So they are very much affected by the civil war and also by the famine. Well, imagine the life in these camps that a person with disability has to cope with, spending whole day waiting in line for access for nutrition and so on. The life world of a person with disability in these camps is really challenging.
Yes, you mentioned one of the big challenges, and that is getting access to the food and having to stand in long lines if you have a disability. There are other issues as well. Can you talk about some of the other challenges that people with disabilities in South Sudan are facing right now?
Access to education and medical care also is a huge problem for persons with disabilities all over South Sudan. Light for the World is more concentrated on the southern part of South Sudan. So we are engaged in supporting persons with disabilities in internally displaced people camps around Juba. We already supported there the food distribution to make sanitary facilities accessible, but also support inclusive education in mainstream schools to do some rehabilitation program with partners that are located in central Equatoria and in western Equatoria, and also to give some primary eye care support in southern parts of South Sudan.
And looking at the situation that they are facing right now, there are also some challenges regarding specific diets and even how the food is administered to them. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
The situation is that farmers have been unable to tend their crops while more and more internally displaced persons are moving into already overcrowded refugee camps. As the camps are more in rural regions, it is not so easy to reach there. As Light for the World, supporting organizations that are active in humanitarian response with disability mainstreaming training, so to say that the organizations do monitor if persons with disabilities receive supplies, if they get utensils that they need to eat, if there is additional high-energy food available, that persons with disabilities who may need specific diets or special liquid-based supplements, that they are supported. Of course, also, if they have family members or need an extra assistance to support.
Your organization, Light for the World, is calling on the international community to step up their involvement and helping the people of South Sudan. So what else needs to be done from the international community to assist with the food crisis there?
From the international community, it is very important that the IDP camps are supported, that the organizations get support, that donors support the organizations that are already active there in supporting the people, because it's a humanitarian crisis situation for years already, and the new famine is just a new horrific scenario in addition to the scenario that is already very, very difficult.
Malte Finders is Light for the World's program coordinator for South Sudan. He spoke with me from Vienna.
The South African government is appealing for calm in the wake of anti-government violence this week and ahead of tomorrow's planned anti-immigrant march. AFP reports that shops and homes owned by foreign nationals in the Pretoria area have been looted and burned. Immigrants from South Africa as well as Nigeria and Pakistan have been targets. South African Home Affairs Minister Malusi Gigaba has appealed to all South Africans to desist from rhetoric or actions that are xenophobic. Immigrants in South Africa have been blamed for a lack of jobs, illegal drugs, prostitution, and other problems facing the country. The anti-immigrant march planned for tomorrow will be in Pretoria. Such marches in the past have often led to violence. Organizers say the march will be peaceful and deny that they hate foreigners. Meanwhile, Nigeria has asked the African Union to help stop xenophobic attacks in South Africa. It claims 20 Nigerians were killed there last year. South African authorities deny the claim. Reuters reports that protesters in Nigeria, angry over the situation in South Africa today, attacked the offices of South African mobile phone giant MTN. A company spokesman says the regional MTN head office in Abuja was vandalized and some customers were attacked.
New research shows three African countries hard hit by the HIV/AIDS epidemic, Zimbabwe, Malawi, and Zambia, have made extraordinary progress in confronting the disease. A survey shows investments by the U.S. and other donors are paying off. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
About 76,000 adults and children took part in the survey by providing blood samples. Principal investigator Dr. Jessica Justman says researchers then measured what's called viral load suppression. It's a way of determining how well antiretroviral drug treatment worked.
We measure what proportion of the HIV-infected population has very, very little virus in their blood, what we would call suppressed viral load. Nearly all the time, the only way you can have a suppressed viral load is if you're taking your medications, you're taking them regularly, and that they're working. It's a great way of knowing if people are being successfully treated.
Justman is an associate professor of epidemiology at Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health. She says a big reason for Zimbabwe, Malawi, and Zambia turning the corner on HIV is the U.S. program PEPFAR, the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief. It's helped to provide antiretrovirals, or ARVs, to millions of people in Africa and elsewhere.
What we found in the three countries, average combined, was that 60% of people had a suppressed viral load. When PEPFAR programs began in about 2003, almost nobody had a suppressed viral load. So we've gone from what was, you know, in effect, 0% of people with HIV having their infection under control to now well over half having their infection under control.
Justman says the success rate in Zimbabwe, Malawi, and Zambia is in keeping with reaching the 90-90-90 targets that UNAIDS announced 2 years ago.
With those targets, it says 90% of people who have HIV should know about their diagnosis. They should be aware of it. And then of those, 90% should be on treatment. And of those, 90% should have a suppressed viral load.
The Columbia University professor says if those goals are reached, an AIDS-free generation is possible. That's even if everyone infected with HIV does not have his or her viral load fully suppressed. So Zimbabwe, Malawi, and Zambia may be well on their way with a combined average viral load suppression rate of 60%.
If you do the math, 90% of 90% of 90%, it means 73% of people with HIV need to have a suppressed viral load by the year 2020, and globally that number has to be maintained for 10 years, and that should allow new infections to be eliminated starting in 2030. And I realize that sounds like a long way to go, but 60% is pretty close to 73%, especially if you were starting from zero.
So people on antiretrovirals can lead pretty normal lives.
Pretty normal is a good way to put it. Each time these studies are done on how long do people with HIV live, people with HIV are getting closer and closer to a normal lifespan. Certainly that's true, you know, here in the States.
PEPFAR is one of the programs under review by the new Trump administration. Dr. Justman says it should not be considered an entitlement program.
My opinion is no. It's a really important part of global public health diplomacy. Having more people staying alive and being healthy is a stabilizing force in a lot of these countries so that there's a greater sense of optimism about the future and less opportunities for terrorism and other types of instability.
HIV/AIDS was declared a national security threat by the Clinton administration in the 1990s. Justman says a lot more still needs to be done to raise awareness about the disease, especially among young people. Research on HIV viral load suppression is planned in 13 countries overall under the PEPFAR-supported project known as FIA, or Population-Based HIV Impact Assessment. All but one of the countries are in Africa. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
In Zimbabwe's capital, police continue to crack down on street vendors. As a result, many vendors have taken to selling their wares at night to avoid arrest and loss of their goods. Reporter Kudzana Vashi has the story.
It is 7 p.m. in the streets of Harare. Most of the people are making their way home from work as cars drive by. Vendors line the streets and roadsides with their mini stalls to make quick sales. A majority of vendors now prefer trading after regular work hours. Nelson Kurea, a vendor who sells his wares at night, explains why.
We decided to sell our goods at night because during the day there is a lot of activities. There are a lot of disturbances by the city council. They are confiscating our goods, so it's hard to sell them during the day.
Because municipal police have an 8-to-5 job, it is safer for vendors to sell after working hours. Their goods include food, new and second-hand clothing, and toiletries. Street vendor prices are usually cheaper compared to supermarkets. Kurea explains where they get the goods.
We saw different groceries. We get them from downtown. There are shops that they get them from the neighboring countries. So that's where we get our stuff at a cheap price. Then we bring them to the CBD. That's how we make our money.
During the day, most vendors have other jobs. Selling goods on the street is a way of making extra money. Meke Ochideme is a spokesperson for the Harare City Council.
I think it's people who are coming to supplement their incomes, people who have been at work, who also engage in vending at night. So the numbers naturally increase because it's more people coming in to trade. And it's also a relation that most people will be going home, and as people go home, they buy supplies for their homes.
Chideme explains why the city council has been involved in a drive to reduce the number of vendors in the business district.
To make sure that we get vendors decentralized, they sell at various points within and around Harare. Like, we are trying to put infrastructure for them where they can trade in the suburbs. It's about creating the market out there.
Kuria says the move by council has loopholes and will not be enough to get them off the streets. For Harare vendors, selling at night is a better option than risking arrest and losing all their stock during the day. This is Kudzai Zunawashe, reporting for Voice of America from Harare.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Ruhib, 21 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Pope Francis says millions of people in South Sudan risk being condemned to death by famine and war. The South African government is appealing for calm ahead of tomorrow's planned anti-immigrant march. And police continue their crackdown on street vendors in Zimbabwe's capital. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Until 1992, no one had ever seen a planet outside our solar system. Since then, over 3,400 so-called exoplanets have been discovered. This week, a group of scientists announced in the journal Nature that they have identified seven Earth-sized planets orbiting a dwarf star named TRAPPIST-1. In space, distance is not very far, a mere 378 trillion kilometers away. Up to three of these planets are cool enough to contain oceans of water and the conditions needed for life. To find out more, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with Professor Sarah Seeger of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Seeger is one of the world's foremost planetary scientists and physicists devoted to the search for extraterrestrial life.
This is truly an exciting discovery. Just for a bit of background, our sun is actually a star. And so all the stars out there are suns. And if our sun has planets, Earth, Venus, Mars, etc., it seems to make sense that other stars should have planets also, right? And they do. And there are thousands of planets that we know about so far. And honestly, there's probably billions and billions of planets out there. But what makes this so special is that this particular star has seven planets. And they're all about the size of Earth. And we think some of them, as heated by their star, might even be the right temperature to have water, which is needed for all life as we know it.
You say this is a real departure then from the planets we've discovered because the temperature is sort of conducive to life?
There are a lot of different things, and it admittedly does get kind of confusing because we have found small planets before. But these planets are special because, first, there's just so many of them in the same planetary system. And second, they're actually planets that are accessible for us to study further. Sometimes we find planets and we know they exist, but it's impossible to find out any more information. The hope is that here we have not just one, but three or possibly even more planets that we think might be the right temperature to host life. And we don't really know until we can look closer.
That's something I've always wondered because, you know, the universe is so vast and obviously potentially so much stranger than we can even imagine. How would we necessarily know that we're looking at life if we see it?
Yeah, I mean, you're right, actually. It is absolutely narrow-minded of us to think that we have to find an exact copy of who we are. But part of the reality is that it's really hard to identify something you can't recognize. It sounds like a poor excuse, but we're definitely going to go for things that we think have more chance to have life that we could actually detect. It just turns out that water is very abundant. And so looking for water is still, we think, the best way to go in the first step toward finding signs of life. It's true that now astronomers think that any liquid will do, any liquid where molecules can react with each other and create new molecules and more complicated molecules would be great.
Now, I understand that these planets aren't visible enough to photograph, you know, traditionally, that their existence was implied by the sort of the diminishment of light coming from this star.
Right, right. It's true that it's very hard to see planets just shining on their own. So instead, astronomers have to use as many tricks as they can. In this particular case, there's a fortuitous, like a very special alignment, where the planets go directly in front of their star, as seen from Earth. And so although the star itself is just a point, a pinprick of light, that light drops by the tiniest amount every time a planet goes in front of it.
Now, in terms of your own particular professional and personal passion regarding these things, are you mostly interested in it from sort of the physics end of it, or are you actually really turned on by the life aspect of it? And so you're kind of the intersection of living things and sort of the fundamental forces of nature?
Probably all of the above. I just love to explore. I think if I was born decades or centuries ago, I would have been one of those explorers who went to places unknown. But I am truly mostly interested in the search for life on other worlds. And I think it's just fair to say that it's not what you're thinking, maybe, that like we're going to see aliens that are going to wave to us or talk to us. Really, we're only looking for like a whiff of a sign. We're looking for gases that might be produced by life that accumulate in the atmosphere and don't belong in the atmosphere, and that we'll be able to infer from afar that it might be caused by life. That's our first step.
You said this is the first step. Any you want to just take us on a little trip here and talk about what some later steps might be?
Well, I think this is going to be a generational journey. I think here we're the first people who even know that there are planets orbiting other stars. And hopefully, in our lifetimes, we'll be able to learn more about them and identify a true Earth twin. I think the later generations will have to figure out how to look at the surfaces and see more details about these worlds. And beyond that, I really hope that our descendants actually do find a way to explore these planets in person.
That was Professor Sarah Seeger, a physics and planetary sciences specialist at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. She spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips from NASA headquarters in Washington, D.C.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Tuesday on Health Chat. February is Heart Health Month in the United States. Host Lenore Moudou will end the month with a look at children and heart disease. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC. Right here on VOA Africa.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 1730 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.